All right. Oh, good to see you guys. I am excited, and as I always say, also nervous. I have the privilege this morning of kicking off a new series that I'm really stoked on. But this series is titled Theology in Song. When we decided to do this series, the way it's going to work, which is really cool, is each teacher that week from the teaching team has picked a song, and I'm not saying just like some worship song or something like that. We've just picked a song that we're going to pull from that and give our lesson from. I made what I'm realizing is now a mistake of suggesting this first week that I would actually perform the song. We'll see how that goes. So, yeah, there we go. I'll just go ahead and say the song I'm going to be teaching from today, my wife is going to hate this, but it's from a band called Pearl Jam, and it's called Just Breathe. And so we'll get into that a little bit, but before we get there, I want to give you sort of an introduction, sort of background to this series and give you a little insight as to maybe why we're doing it. So let's just to say, I have a terrible relationship with technology, and we sort of have been fighting against each other for the last probably 30 years. And so all my stuff kind of messed up, so there aren't going to be any slides up there today. So we're down on pen and paper and what's ever coming out of this mouth. So there you go. But like I said, jumping into why we're doing this series and where this is coming from, I'm going to give you a little bit about music and song and sort of just backfill from there. Music, this is all stuff you guys probably know, but it goes way back. It's been around for a long time. If we're going to take sort of a biblical history look at it, there's this dude named, I believe it's pronounced Jubal or Jubal, who was a descendant of Cain. And in Genesis 4, it says that he was the first of all who play the harp and the flute. And kind of a little cool just connection with this, if you look through like the archaeology stuff from what I can see on Google, that some of the earliest instruments we've ever found are 40,000 years ago back in the Stone Age of these bone flutes. So apparently the flute's been pretty popular all the way up through Jethro Tull and probably nothing beyond that. But so with this too, it's we have a lot of people who kind of theorize that music kind of developed and came along right alongside language. And again, I think that's pretty obvious to most of us. We can believe that to be true. I was just a couple weeks back, I'm in a band, and my band practices out in this sort of sketchy area in Oxnard. And sometimes in the middle of our practices, we'll step outside and have a break, and a whole cast of characters go by, and it's always a little funky. But my buddy Fabio, who's in the band with me, we practice it. It's his connection that we're out there. But anyway, we were hanging out, having a break a couple weeks back, and this dude rolls by really slow on a bike, more of a cholo kind of get up. And he slows as he goes by us, and he's looking, and my drummer sort of moves around where he's out behind the car and all this kind of stuff. And as he goes by, this little whistle kicks off, which I can't whistle, so I'm okay. But whistle kicks off, and then right away, Fabio whistles right back, and then they both nod and go on. And I was like, what was that? He's like, dude, it's the language of my people, man. But there's something in it that music, whether it's just the little joke thing with the whistle, but it's communicated forever. This has gone on as long as we can look back, and I think it's pretty obvious to us. That being said, it's just a universal thing in all humanity, in all cultures. Music making in general is a universal human trait. And we find also that humans are neurologically predisposed to music. And there are actually specific parts of our brain that are designated for processing music. And we also find, those of us who have little kids, that the infants just have this innate musical thing. I used to sing songs to Clash, my son, when he was first born. And it reached a point as he just got a little able to move around and stuff, I couldn't really sing to him too much because he wanted to grab and play the guitar. It was so in him. And both of my boys, the same thing. If I pull the guitar out there, just like right there. They love to take the pick and throw it in the hole. But that must be some other innate human characteristic. I don't know. But, and with this too, like I said, the specific parts of our brain that process music, there are also these psychological effects that come from music. We found that music can help reduce stress, depending on which music you're listening to. It can help manage pain. It can enhance cognitive process. It actually can help boost immunity. Music can help you in physical recovery. It helps reduce, or not reduce, release dopamine and other neurotransmitters. And a cool thing is music can even affect your heart rate, your breathing, and your blood pressure. I've heard people talk about how there's certain ways that our heart can actually connect in with the kick drum. Certain beats, like if you find, you can fall into sync with that music. It's just wild what our bodies and our minds will do going along with this. Now, on a personal level, and this is getting us a little closer to why we're doing this series, we're looking specifically at songs. And I think it's really cool to be doing this because songs are this expressive medium. And we all know that from our own experience that they can impact us on so many levels. Whether it's some experience that you had listening to this, or sometimes you hear a song and it takes you right back to a place. Or sometimes it's the actual content, let's say, of the lyrics, which is more what I'm going to be looking at today. But something just moves you and you can be brought to tears, or it can raise your mood. Myself, as I mentioned, being in a band, playing music, I've been, for most of my life, obsessed with just the songwriting process and just all the tools and everything that we have at our disposal, whether it's rhythm and melody or tempo or the dynamics of loud and quiet and all that stuff. All these things have an impact, and I just love that we can use all of these things and somehow communicate something with the listener. A little quick side with that, a warning before I play a song today. Most of the bands that I've ever played in, I'm not much of a singer. I'm more of I yell a lot. And that's worked for me. It's been great. But there was a long time back, I've been friends with Chris and Ashley for a while, and there was a long time back that they came out with some other friends and saw my band play at the Sewer here in Ventura. And we were playing with some other loud, crazy bands and all this stuff, and it was just what it was. But I don't even know if Chris knows this, but he sort of gave a compliment at the end of the night that really stuck with me. And it was sort of funny, tongue-in-cheek, but it was like, man, I have no idea what you were saying, but everything just, your stuff felt like it had more hope. And that was like really cool to me because you don't have to pick out each word. There's something in, I did my job as a songwriter to put that into the music that we were putting out, because that was something I did want to communicate. We have that we can pull from different things. It can be John Coltrane, there can be no words, and you're pulling it out. You can feel what they're trying to communicate. Now, the question would come up from this, as we're doing this series, okay, that's all great. Songs, music are awesome, but where's the theology part connecting? And I'll say this. So theology is basically, it's a study of the nature of God, right? And we are made in the image of this God. And this God is so concerned with the human experience, so concerned, in fact, that he actually took on flesh and lived out the human experience to perfection. Now, I would say that the Bible as a whole is not only telling the story of God and his creation as we understand it, but I think, especially through Christ, the Bible is calling us back into what it truly means to be human. And anything that we can do that is going to dive into something that is so innately human as music, songs, or even any kind of art form, really, something that is so intrinsic in what it is to be human, I feel like that is a worthwhile theological pursuit. And I think in looking at these songs, even this one that I'm about to sing really nervously, in looking at these songs, there's a lot that we can learn not only about ourselves, but about the God that made us. Cool? All right, let me take a drink and see if I don't have the right thing in this to make me ready. All right. Let me set this up really quickly. Like I said, technology and me didn't work this out as well as it probably should have, but you guys are here for the ride, so let's go. Okay. I don't ever use music stands, but today it's a good time to start. All right. So as I said, this song is called Just Breathe, and it's by Pearl Jam. You guys are probably wondering, Jeremy, you named your son Clash. Why are you doing a Pearl Jam song? There's actually a Pearl Jam Clash connection. We can go into it more later on this, but my wife's shaking her head no. Pearl Jam wouldn't exist without the Clash, for those of you who don't know. Joe Strummer, the lead singer of the Clash, oh my God, I almost committed a sin. Joe Strummer, long after the Clash had broken up, was touring for his solo record, Earthquake Weather, and the drummer in the band he had put together for that was this guy, Jack Irons. Jack Irons is famous for being the drummer for, you're getting all the nerddom, oh, here we go. He was the original drummer for Red Hot Chili Peppers. He's been the beatkeeper for a lot of wonderful, wonderful bands. When they were playing down in San Diego, this band up in Seattle had put out a little demo tape because their whole thing had broken up from what they had come from before. We can get more into that history, anybody who wants to nerd out on that. But this demo tape was in the hand of Jack Irons. Jack Irons is playing in San Diego, and the guy running the door for security is this guy named Eddie Vedder, a friend of Jack Irons. And Jack Irons says, hey, man, I know you sing in this band. Check this out. He gives him that tape. That week, Ed went out and surfed for a little bit. Then he came in and recorded some vocals, wrote lyrics and recorded some vocals over those songs, sent that up, and my life was completely changed from all that that happened. Now, this band... We're going to do a little weird thing of switching from mic to mic. Sorry, Jared. You want to go into this one? All right, cool. So Ed, I don't know all this stuff about Ed. I remember specifically as a kid the Unplugged performance. I remember seeing the bold letters and markers as he wrote pro-choice on his arm. There was just this movement of caring from that guy, and there's a lot of wonderful lyrics that I could pull from, but this song in particular, not that it's my favorite Pearl Jam song or anything, but it connected with me in a way that I hope it'll connect with you guys. So here we go. Let's try this. I understand that every life must end on. As we sit alone, I know someday we must go on. Oh, I'm a lucky man to count on both hands the ones I love. Some folks just have one, yeah, others they got none on. Stay with me, oh, let's just breathe. Practice all my sins, never gonna let me win on. Under everything, I'm just another human being on. Yeah, I don't wanna hurt. There's so much in this world to make me bleed. Stay with me, you're all I see. Did I say that I need you?
Did I say that I want you? If I didn't, I'm a fool. See, no one knows this more than me. As I come clean out. I wonder every day as I look upon your face on. Everything you gave, yeah, nothing you would take on. Yeah, nothing you would take. Everything you gave. Did I say that I need you? Did I say that I want you? If I didn't, I'm a fool. No one knows this more than me. And I come clean out. But nothing you would take. Every oh, hold me till I die. Meet you on the other side.
We're back on. I did it, guys. I did the thing. I did the thing. Thank you guys for being so gracious. All right. So, the funny thing with that, I had some friends in high school that were a little bit older than me, and they had a Pearl Jam cover band. And my older friend Nick that sang in that band, I remember thinking like, man, Nick's such a good singer. He's so cool. Then I got older and I was like, well, I really love Ed, but he's not that good of a singer. And it's not, but he's better than me, so it's okay. Okay, so why did I pick that song? Well, I hope you guys could pull out some of the lyrics that were in there. But the opening line, yes, I understand that every life must end. There's this idea, not an idea, just a fact, a truth, that the human experience is bookended by this life and death. I love that that song is called Just Breathe, because the life and death experience, as we understand in Genesis, where it says, the Lord formed man from the dust of the ground. He breathed the breath of life into the man's nostrils, and the man became a living person. That first breath to that last breath. And in that sense, there is this purest form of what it means to be human in this act of breathing. It's the purest form of the human experience, in my understanding. I know when we practice mindfulness or any of these kind of things that have come about, especially through our contemplative services, there's this idea of returning to the breath, like coming back to the central part of just being. As Ed says in that song, let's stay with me, let's just breathe. So we were made with this, with God breathing that life into us, but there's also this other innate thing into how we were made, which I would say that we were made for each other, we need each other. God, it says in Genesis that it was not good that man was alone, and we all know from that story of the creation myth that we had to find for him a helper, a word that gets very problematic for us at times, but there is no subjugation in that. There is no one above the other. Even looking into the specifics of how the myth pulls out that creation, there's the pulling out from the side, from that rib, and creating that side by side. We were meant and connected together from that beginning. Now, in this too, it also says through the creation story that we were made in his image. Specifically, God says, let us make man in our image. There's a plurality that is there. And We have heard this said before, but I don't know how much we've kind of pulled from it, but the fact that this God who made us, we also describe him as this is the God who is love. God is love, and we were made in the image of this God that is love. Now, with that, there's this idea, C.S. Lewis kind of pulls apart, it wouldn't be a Jeremy sermon if I didn't quote C.S. Lewis, but C.S. Lewis pulls apart this idea in his four loves, this difference between what he calls need love and gift love. The basic idea is that love needs an object. I can't just, I love, and there's nothing for me to love. Like, we need that object, that back and forth, to have that relationship exist. Now, C.S. Lewis explains how God, being the Trinity, being three in one, that there is a self-sustaining love, that he gives out this gift, but he doesn't have that same kind of need that we do because he's self-contained in that. But I would argue that he does care about us so much that he goes on to demonstrate what that looks like for us to need that object. So, real quick, we are made for each other. We need each other. It's innately in us. That lyric that I sang, it means, that's what really hits me. It was like, did I say that I need you? Did I say that I want you? If I didn't, I'm a fool, you see. I just think about this idea of us trying to do things on our own, becoming so calloused that we feel like we don't have to need anybody else. Needing somebody is a weakness. And I'm here to say that's completely counter to how we were made. To love is to be vulnerable. C.S. Lewis talks about this also in For Love. He says, to love it all is to be vulnerable. Love anything and your heart will be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give it to no one, not even an animal. Wrap it carefully around with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it up safe in a casket or a coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, unpenetrable, irredeemable. To love is to be vulnerable. This need to be vulnerable and what it looks like, I always think of these three kind of main examples from Jesus. He demonstrates vulnerability, first of all, in the incarnation. We have God, who I said is self-sustaining, able to exist without needing anything, but he chooses to come in the form of a baby. And those of us who have had the luxury of having little bitty babies, they need everything. It's cool when they start to like grow up and get their own personalities and learn to talk and ask for things, but when they're brand new and kind of do nothing, they're completely relying on you. It's really, I think, important for us to think about God in that particular space and time, that he allowed that to be in flesh. The other demonstration of vulnerability, I think maybe some of us miss this sometimes, but do we all know the story of the woman at the well? So, yeah. Something that gets kind of glossed over that sometimes, but is Jesus was sitting at the well. His boys were off going to buy food. And the woman comes up to the well, and Jesus asks her to get him a drink. He's choosing to need her in that point. When it goes on and she's talking about, he talks about like the water of life and everything, but the fact that he put himself in that position to be vulnerable and needing somebody who in so many respects of the culture was lower than him. I think that's something for us to think about. We need to be able to be in need of somebody else. It's a weird statement, I know. But that's the vulnerability that comes up. The final big demonstration that I always get of Jesus' vulnerability is pretty obvious, but on the cross. So not only did he come as a baby and allow, to be in complete at the mercy of everybody around him, his parents and his family to take care of him. But on the cross, even down to the part of Simon in the crucifixion story carrying the cross for him, that's a amazingly moving part of that story to me, that somebody came along and carried that cross, that he was so broken that there was somebody to carry it for him. So why am I saying all this stuff about that vulnerability? There's a line in the song that repeats in the refrain thing where it says, everything you gave, nothing you would take. And that's an interesting thing to me. There's this call in Galatians for us to bear each other's burdens. And I think the one sort of idea that I want to get across today is we seem to understand how to do for others. We understand that it's our Christian duty and even just our human duty to help others in need. But this idea of taking, there's a negative connotation to it, and it's, I think it's right. We're not supposed to be out exploiting each other, but there's this difference. If we are to bear each other's burdens, that means that some of us are going to be the ones who are being carried. And that's where I think for most of us it becomes very, very vulnerable. That's where I think it becomes really hard. I'm okay to be put out if, I shouldn't say this, but if some of you need help to move, I have a truck. I hate to put that out there, but that stuff happens all the time. And I'm sure I'm going to get a message from somebody. But so that is there. We've all been in that, and we can talk about like, oh, you know, it's really hard. I got a truck. Everybody's asked me to help move, all this stuff. But that's fine. But when I need help, I feel just like icky and wrong, and I feel almost shameful to ask for help. I'm grateful to say that so many of you in this family have helped me and my family in so many ways. You know, I've mentioned to you a couple times, this last year was really rough, and you guys were there to help lift us up. But that vulnerability of needing that help is really just, it's raw. You're exposed, and that's really hard. But I think, and this is not a long message as I'm kind of bringing it around to the end of it, I think that this is the heart of the human experience. We understand that we are supposed to be living and loving sacrificially and giving of ourselves. But there's a difference between taking and receiving. And that vulnerability of being able to receive love, to receive help from each other, is crucial if we're going to live out the human experience to its perfection the way Jesus demonstrated for us. The line in the song that I sang that is so moving for me and really hard for me to sing sometimes at the end is that line where he says, hold me till I die, meet you on the other side. So all of this coming together from the first breath to the last breath, there's this unknown, there's this natural vulnerability of the human experience that I can, like C.S. Lewis said, close it up, put it in a box, and try and just stay guarded from everything. I'm not going to be touched. I'm going to be impenetrable, but I'm missing so much. And the reality is the mystery of what this life looks like, as I love so much in the liminal thing, embracing the mystery, that has to do with us being open to that. We have to let our guards down. And whether we speak with so much confidence or not, what happens on the other side is a mystery for all of us too. And that is frightening. It's so scary. From the first breath to the last breath, we have this sort of idea of, okay, I understand, I got these things. We don't. We're lying to ourselves. But what happens after that last breath, I feel like as much as we need each other in all of this, there's going to be so much moving on through that last part. As he says, hold me till I die, there's going to be a vulnerable time when we need each other more than ever. And we need to be practicing that loving vulnerability of receiving the love and being there for each other and carrying each other. couple quick things to say as I close this out. I said we need each other. I also said I should have done a Clash song, which I didn't do. But I do want to tie it back to this. Yeah, exactly. Da 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 da. This week, as we all know, has been really hard. And we've seen, I think, not just this week, this last year, this last 5 years, the last 10 years, we've seen all the hurtful things that that people do to each other. And for me to get up here and say, all right, but we need to be vulnerable and let yourself be loved, that's really hard. People do really, really cruel things to each other. And you're telling me, Jeremy, that I'm supposed to open up and be soft and take it on? That's pretty hard. But the example that we're given, as I said, the three examples in Jesus, that last one was exactly that. It was sacrifice. But we know that there's no greater love than what happened there on that cross. That's what we're stepping in line for. Not that we're all going to be martyrs up on a cross, but we're stepping in line following a leader who walked up that hill and died on that cross. That's the kind of vulnerability that we're stepping into, but I do believe that that is one of the most human things we could ever see. It's one of the most human actions in the Bible, whether it feels like it or not, because it seems so unnatural to be that self-sacrificial and that vulnerable, but it is. As I said, the Clash song thing, I am going to close out with a quote from one of my heroes, a man named Joe Strummer. Before he passed, he said in an interview, he said, "Now I'd like to say, people can change anything they want to, and that means everything in the world." He said, "People are running about in their little tracks. I am one of them. But we've got to stop just following our little mouse trail. People can do anything. This is something that I'm beginning to learn. People are out there doing bad things to each other. That's because they've been dehumanized. It's time to take humanity back into the center of the ring and follow that for a time." He said, "Greed, it ain't going anywhere. They should put that on a billboard across Times Square. Without people, you're nothing." That's my spiel. And that's my spiel. As the band comes up, too, I do want to say this ties in completely, but we are in this together, and we have a God who gave the example of us communing together by breaking the bread and taking this meal together. We are all connected through the body of Christ. All of us are connected in this, and we feel the pain of each other, and we feel the love of each other. So let's, as we take communion, we take the bread and the cup. You guys can come up through the aisles as you take, and you can go out through the outward, like Erica said. But let's remember that connection that we all have, that Christ has with all of us in that body. All right? Amen?